So he came back to America, and he ended up coming to one of our temples. But he was still into his silent meditation. So he said, all right, I'm going to go to the temple here, and, you know, this guy's chanting and everything, but, you know, I hope they don't try to get me to jump and dance, you know, because that would totally disturb my meditation on the absolute, or a hole in the universe, or I don't know, whatever it is, the void. So he was like, I've seen this. I've seen this quite a bit. You find in at least in those days, you would see lots of kids come thinking that they were big yogis, and they'd sit at the back of the temple. The devotees would be Hari Bol, you know, bright faced, and these guys would be seated at the back, you know, trying to do their silent meditation in the middle of kirtan. It was kind of funny. Because Krishna says you have to go to a secluded place if you want to do that yoga. And it's not possible in this Kali Yuga anyway, because even if you go to the Himalayas, you know, some mountain expedition will come by and disturb you, or, you know, Air India will be fighting with Pakistan and they'll blow your cave up. Something will happen. But anyway, Radha Swami came to tell me he was sitting at the back, and this went on for almost a year or so. And, you know, gradually, he kind of got accustomed to the devotees, but he was still into his silent meditation. And then all of a sudden, one Sunday feast, he found himself at the front of the crowd of the devotees, and he was staring at the deities. And he began to notice that the deities were going up and down, up and down, up and down. And he was really shocked. And then he realized it was actually the deities were okay, but he was jumping up and down. So, you stay long enough, you just get caught in the vibration of the holy name. So anyway, we're going to read a verse today about a journey. I'm going on a journey tomorrow to Siam. Going to Siam. The king and I. Anyway, going to Bangkok. This is from the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita called The Contents of the Gita Summarized. This text number 13. Krishna says, Dehino smin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhiras tatra namuyati. How many of you know that verse? One, two, three, four. I was going to say, everybody join me. Five. Okay, let's try it. Everybody, try to catch hold of the words. Dehino smin yatha dehe komaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhiras tatra namuyati. Dehino smin yatha dehe komaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhiras tatra namuyati. Actually, in the beginning, we didn't have books like this. And Prabhupada would have a book, and he would chant the Sanskrit, and sometimes we'd try to follow along. And then, you know, afterwards, you'd look at the book, and it was totally different from what you mumbled when you were chanting. But just that attempt to try to grasp the words helped, because when you finally did get it right, you knew exactly what it wasn't, because you'd already chanted that before. And so this verse, the translation is, as the embodied soul continually passes In this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So this is a journey, actually. We're having a journey. They call it a sojourn. The word for our stay in the material world is our sojourn, or our soul journey, right? Sojourn comes from, maybe it comes from soul journey, I don't know. Good speculation there. But that's what we're doing. We're passing from one body to another. If anybody ever challenges you about the idea of reincarnation, you can quote this verse from the Gita. Since every living entity is an individual soul, each is changing his body at every moment, manifesting sometimes as a child, sometimes as a youth, sometimes as an old man. Yet the same spirit soul is there and does not undergo any change. This individual soul finally changes the body at death and transmigrates to another body, and since it is sure to have another body in the next birth, either material or spiritual, there was no cause for lamentation by Arjuna on account of death, neither for Bhishma nor for Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. Rather, he should rejoice for their changing bodies from old to new ones, thereby rejuvenating their energy. Such changes of body account for varieties of enjoyment or suffering. According to one's work in life. So Bhishma and Drona, being noble souls, were surely going to have spiritual bodies in the next life, or at least life in the heavenly planets for superior enjoyment of material existence. So in either case, there was no cause of lamentation. So Arjuna is in a difficult situation because he is going to have to kill his relatives, his friends, some of his friends. But even more than that, he's going to have to kill his gurus. You know? I mean, a teacher basically means a guru. His spiritual guru was, of course, Krishna. But his military guru was Dronacharya. And the laws of Kshatriya Dharma demand that in a battle you cannot consider who the enemy is. You have to do your duty, and if it is a righteous battle, you have to kill. So this is a very big problem for him, and Krishna wanted to help him through that difficult time in his life by giving him the proper understanding. And there is real power in knowledge. In fact, knowledge is the pathway to bhakti, in the sense that the culmination of knowledge is that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. So it plays a very important part. Our devotion to Krishna is not irrational. We are not blind faith followers. We are very rational. We thought things through clearly. Now, he's guiding Arjuna about this idea that the soul will survive the death of the body, that the soul is traveling from one body to another. Arjuna's big mistake was not that. Arjuna's biggest mistake was, who knows what his biggest mistake was? Anybody have any ideas? What was Arjuna's biggest mistake? Yes. He was thinking he was the body. Yes. What else? Any other ideas? Yes. He's going to kill, but he's a Kshatriya, that's his duty, right? He's supposed to kill.
He's not killing.
Oh, he thought he was the doer. Yes, very good. He thought he was the doer. Yes. I'm sorry? Can we relay that forward? What did he say? Huh? It was boring for Arjuna? Well, I'm partially deaf. We have fun with this sometimes.
Lamenting and mourning.
Oh, lamenting and
mourning.
He was lamenting in the morning. Yeah. Okay. Okay. What else? Any other ideas? Yes. It's the fan's fault, actually. I can't hear you. What? Oh, he was thinking about what will happen with his mind and senses. Oh, yes. He was thinking about happiness. Well, actually, yeah.
You're considering his duty, how they're saying his words.
Considering his duty to?
Without understanding that the first and foremost duty is Krishna, who is the controller.
Ah, now we're getting, actually, the number of things were said. Arjuna's biggest mistake was he was thinking, how can I be happy? Instead of thinking, how can I make Krishna happy? So it was very selfish. Maybe he was right. Maybe he wouldn't be happy by killing his relatives. But he should have understood that that's totally the wrong attitude. Now, it's hard when that's all you've been doing for all of this life and probably lacks of births previously. You've been going under this mentality that if I want to be happy, I have to serve I. Yay. But it's a big mistake. You have to water the roots of the tree. You have to serve the origin, Krishna. Then you can become happy. And so Krishna is giving Arjuna this understanding. Any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul, and nature, both material and spiritual, is called a dhira, or most sober man. Such a man is never deluded by the change of bodies. The Mayavadi theory of oneness of the spirit soul cannot be entertained on the ground that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces as a fragmental portion. Such cutting into different individual souls would make the supreme cleavable. There's a big word for you, cleavable. You know, one of those big knives that they chop meat with. It's called a cleaver. C-L-E-A-V-E-R, whatever, cleave. So cleavable, cuttable, or changeable. So, you know, the Upanishads state, the Vedas state, that the Supreme Personality is not cut by any weapon. So how is it the Mayavadis object that there is transformation? So, such cutting into different individual souls would make the Supreme cleavable or changeable, and this the Mayavadis can't accept, against the principle of the Supreme Souls being unchangeable. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, the fragmental portions of the Supreme exist eternally, sanatana, and are called kshara, K-S-A-R-A, kshara. That is, they have a tendency to fall down into material nature. So, again, we were in the spiritual world. And this is interesting because the journey that we're on is not exactly like a journey of going from Brooklyn to Long Island. And you pass so many stoplights and you know, water towers and cars and whatever it is. It's not a journey in the sense that we normally think of, but it's a very subtle journey, and it's been going on in the Chaitanya Charitamrita stated, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev. We have been wandering throughout the universe for many, many lifetimes. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Kripai Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. Only when we get a little bit of mercy, we get the right understanding from a teacher of Krishna consciousness, are we able to get out of this anxiety-ridden journey. Like, I'm taking a flight tomorrow, and it's like 20-hour flight. And, you know, that's a long flight, and it's very uncomfortable. And, you know, you can't just, like, get up and go out and have a stroll and, you know, do your calisthenics. You're stuck in a seat for 20 hours, you know, and even if you want to get up and go somewhere, there's this little, you know, aisleway, and there's, you know, 30 people walking up and down, so it's like you're going to get squeezed by this one, you know. So it's really an uncomfortable journey. So in that sense, traveling can be very disturbing. But what we want is to come to the place where we don't have to go through all this anxiety. We don't have to go through all this misery. We don't have to, I mean, we're in an illusion. And the miseries which we experience, we don't have to experience them. It's very hard to understand that, you know, somebody tells you, you know, you just got hit by a car, and you're lying on the side of the road, and blood is gushing out of your head, and one of your legs has been torn off, and you're screaming, medic, medic. And, you know, somebody walks up to you and says, you know, you're an illusion, man. This is not actually happening to you. You don't respond very well to that person. It happened once in Australia. The devotees had a Ratha Yatra, and one Indian lady fell under the wheel of the cart, and she got flattened. And of course she died, or she was dying and she died. So the devotees rushed up, oh, how auspicious, and they began to have kirtan, and the newspapers reported the next day, you know, with a picture of the devotees having kirtan beside this dying lady. You know, that the Hare Krishnas were just heartless and had no compassion for the dying body, which is, in fact, we don't have a lot of concern for the death of the body. But we have to change the journey that we're going on. We have to get a new travel agent. We have to change our destination and, you know, order the vegetarian meal and, you've got to have a change in your whole way of looking at things. And it's not easy. We're stubborn. It's in our self-interest, and in your saner moments, you can understand that it's true. Either you sit back and you watch, you know, one of these NYPD serials, or L.A. Cops or something, or Miami Five. I don't know what they call it. Anyway, you see what that, just watch it for real life. Why watch the television? Just stand out on the corner of Flatbush and you know, whatever, 42nd and 8th Avenue or Times Square. Just watch, you know, just sit down, get relaxed, you know, a lassie, a nice cold lassie and, you know, some prasadam and, you know, and just watch for about 5 or 10 hours what's going on. You see, it's a pretty bizarre situation. And we really ought to, there's no reason for us to persist. Krishna's calling us. Okay, forget the Bhagavad Gita, forget the Vaishnavas, but look at all the spiritual people throughout our history who have advised us to take up a spiritual path. But people are just, someone's telling me about a program the other day in New Rossell. And so they made a lot of advertisement and, you know, a lot of new people showed up. And I said, well, yeah, it's New Rossell. Of course, new people are going to show up. But there were 50 or 60 people. And they had a little kirtan. And then Maharaj began to give class. And immediately started to give class one by one in a continuous stream. People got up and walked out because they just, I don't know, to me, it doesn't make sense to me. The only thing that makes sense to me is to find out more about my eternal life. That's the only thing that makes any sense. You know, it's like I read recently, this is a good example of obstinacy. Dog-like obstinacy. I read something, an email somebody sent to me about an actual happenstance. It was one of those documents that was released by the government 20 years later, 30 years later. You know, like, you know, you've all heard the story that during the Cuban crisis, you know, twice or thrice, they were just about to push the button and start a nuclear war. It was a mistake. They made some mistake. It was the chain of command got messed up, and there was almost a nuclear war over nothing. But this was a situation where this captain of a ship, this actually happened, the American Navy, they had done some exercises in the Atlantic up near Newfoundland, Canada. So they were, you know, it was the evening and they were all pretty tired, and the captain just happened to be up on the deck, and then the navigator and the communications, I don't know what the people are called, but anyway, the communications man reported that there's a signal coming from our starboard bow, a light, Morse code, that we should change our course by 10 degrees, and we should go 10 degrees east. So, you know, the captain was, you know, a little proud of his aircraft carrier, and he said, will you send back a message that I advise that you change your course and go 10 degrees west? And so then they sent that out, and then another signal comes back that, negative, I advise that you change your course and go 10 degrees east. So then the captain said, do you know that I am, you know, a captain of an aircraft carrier in the United States Navy, And I'm ordering you to change your course. And then the signal came back that, well, I'm an ensign, first class, but still I advise you to change your course and go, you know, 10 degrees east. And went back and forth like that. Finally, the captain said that, look, I'm the captain of the USS Enterprise, and we have 5 battleships with us, and you better change your course. And so then the ensign flashed back, well, I'm a lighthouse, so it's your call. You can do what you want. But I mean, why did it have to come to that point? The guy was so arrogant, you know. He could have explored the matter. Why should I change my course? Who are you? None of that. He just... And that's our position here in this material world. We struggle hard to make ends meet. We, you know, when we're young, we're full of enthusiasm. Gradually, we get worn down by all the stress and strain and all the curves in the road. We're traveling down the road of life, and there are many curves and there are many obstacles that you don't know about that weren't there on the road map when you first got it. And so you get worn down, and you know, like when I went to see my father one time and I was trying to preach to him, you know, Dad, you're real intelligent, you know, and you know, this is ancient philosophy from India, great culture, and I think you should, you know, read this and become a believer in God. And, you know, he said, well, son, when I was your age, I used to be idealistic too, but now I'm older and more mature, and, you know. It happens. Time wears you down, and you just become settled here somehow, even though, like the story of Lord Brahma, and you know, he Indra committed some offenses against Brihaspati and his guru, the guru of all the demigods. Indra's the king of the heavenly planets. But he committed some offense, ignored him, and he was cursed to become a pig on the earth planet. So, you know, he got into it, you know. When you're a pig, you don't know you're not a, you know, that you're a pig. You just know that the stool tastes good, and, you know, that's, you can do what you like, you know, every night, 10 times. But what happened was, after a number of years, there was a lot of mismanagement up there in the heavenly planets. Because Indra's, you know, he's the king of the demigods for a reason. He can organize things. He can keep things together. So Lord Brahma, finally, he decided that he had to get Indra back. And so he went down to him and he told him, look, you know, you should come back to the heavenly planets now. And Indra's response was, no, I can't come back. Come on, man, I got my sheep pig, I got 5 piglets, there's another one on the way, and, you know, I got a mortgage, and, you know, on my little stool house here, and, you know, I can't come back. And he was stuck in a rut. And finally, Lord Brahma had to kill his wife and his kids. And then it shook him up, and finally he realized he wasn't a pig, he was Lord Indra. And for us, it's almost like, you know, even though Krishna's telling us it's a lighthouse, but we're so stubborn. He's telling us that I'm time, and I'm going to destroy you, so don't fight me. You just take shelter, I'll lead you. Both in this life and the next. And it is, and unless you somehow or other, I mean, you have to work on this, and you have to have friends help you work on it, because you can't do it alone. It's too tough. So you have to have communities, you have to live near devotees, you have to call devotees on the phone every day if you're out there, you're a householder, or you're single or whatever, but you don't have direct contact with the temple. You got to keep in touch. It's your responsibility. But you've got to keep working on yourself to purify your mind of this false conception. And it requires a little bit of humility, and it requires a strong desire to stop traveling your gutti. No more traveling of the mind. You want to rest at the lotus feet of Narayana. Narayana means the resting place of all living entities. So, the second chapter is actually my favorite chapter, because it is a contents of the Gita summarized, and I like to chant these verses. Very, very nice. And this particular verse at this point, this is practically the beginning of Krishna's theology, philosophical discourse. Before, he was just bringing Arjuna to the point of accepting his chariot driver as more than a chariot driver, but as his teacher. And sishyasteham shadimam tvam prapanam, that was a few slokas back. Text number, what is it? It's text number 7. And then Krishna goes on to, Arjuna actually goes further and says, I'm in anxiety, I have so many tears, I can't dry up my grief, I can't stop mourning for the loss of my friends, etc. And Hrishikesha, please help me. And then Krishna chastises him, saying, you're talking like a learned person, a pundit, but you're actually a fool. And then he starts to talk about this journey that we're all traveling through. It's a false journey through the material world, and it leads to more misery, and it goes on perpetually. So it's time now. Do not hesitate. Go forward and meet all the challenges that life has to offer you with Krishna consciousness. And just like Krishna is ajita, unconquerable, you will also have no problems in life. I guarantee it. Nothing can curb your enthusiasm. Nothing can stop your spirit except yourself. Your corrupted mind, your uncontrolled mind. I'm sure you've all heard it before. I think I've even told it before, but you probably heard it from every senior preacher comes through. It's just a standard joke, but it was actually, it doesn't come from Pogo. There was someone else who originally said it, and Pogo picked it up later on. You know the one I'm talking about, right? Pogo, you know the cartoon character, Pogo? Everybody knows? How many knows? Who reads the comics? None of you read the comics. Can't believe it. How many of you read the sports page? How many of you read the newspaper? How many of you read the Bhagavad Gita? How many of you don't know how to read? Okay. You're excused. Anyway, Pogo is this cartoon. I know you don't read the cartoon. You watch them on television. Okay. Pogo is this, it's like Charlie Brown, kind of that kind of character. And he's got some friends, you know, and one day he dresses up in a king's outfit, and he's got a crown, and he's got a sword, and he's, you know, pretending he's going out to battle. Where are you going, Pogo? I'm going out to fight the enemy. And he, you know, in the next frame, he goes off, and he's, you know, and his friends are, oh, wow, he's going out to fight. That's great. Oh, Pogo, all glorious, you know. And then a little while later, he comes back, and he says, I have found the enemy. And the enemy is us. So, that's what it is. The only thing that's stopping us is, really what it is it, you can break it down. You can break it down into its smallest, what do they call that you do with numbers? In algebra, huh? Come again.
Denominator,
the smallest common denominator, right. Been a long time. Brain fog. Smallest common denominator. And really what it boils down to is, just on Friday and Saturday and Sunday night, whenever you have spare time, find out where there is some spiritual activity going on. For example, the other day I was out in Lefferts Boulevard. Not far away, but took me about an hour and a half to get there because I got lost. Anyway, I went to a program there, and it's just a house, you know, just a house where a devotee lives. But he decided that I don't want to live in a house anymore. I want to live in a temple. So he turned his house into a temple, and then he thought, well, you know, how am I going to support my temple? So he turned the upper portion of his house into a restaurant. And all of a sudden, he's got a great little restaurant. He gets about 50, 60 people a day coming to his restaurant. Got a super temple downstairs, really nice temple. People are coming for kirtan. I met one boy there who, you know, hasn't had much contact with ISKCON, although he's been reading Bhagavad Gita, etc., on his own for some time. But he was ecstatic to know there was a temple right next door. You know, it was just in somebody's house. And that's, you know, you got to look around and find something that you can do that keep you in touch with Krishna. Like I said, you know, just like in your business, you may have many assignments to call this person or that person or to do this work or that work. Every day, call some devotee, say, Hare Krishna, how are you doing today? What's happening in your life? Oh, yeah, that problem, yeah, I went through that too, you know. And, you know, just talk about anything, but keep in touch with devotees. And it's the little things, and gradually, before you know it, you won't even have to make a big decision to surrender to Krishna. Because by numerous small decisions, because that's what a journey is also, it's just, you know, staying on the path, you know, like going on the freeway in New York, there's so many off-ramps. That's why you get lost, because after a while you think, geez, maybe I should be taking one of these off-ramps. There's so many of them. You know, you ignore the off-ramps. You just stay on the highway and, you know, get there to go up Rockaway Boulevard and, you know, don't get off. Don't listen to anybody. Just go up Rockaway and hit Lefferts and... I blew it, you know. Didn't do that. So, you don't have big decisions. You don't just make a lot of good small decisions to keep in touch. And before you know it, you'll be there. It was not like you came to a wall and it was, you know, 60 feet high and you were told, now this is spiritual life, you have to climb the wall and get up. It's not like it doesn't happen all at once. This, It says it's day in, day out, making those small decisions to get association, to chant your rounds. You didn't chant your rounds today, so, you know, pick them up tomorrow. And if you can't pick them up tomorrow, and suppose they're lost forever, but try again. Keep trying. You got lots of time. You got nothing but time. So, I always get very inspired to speak to the devotees here because you have all been very kind to me, and I hope to be back in 4 or 5 months from Bangkok, and hope I can render some more service to Radha Govinda, and we'll go on a journey together. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.